There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jimmy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to all four corners of the globe on this beautiful greenish-blue planet we call our Earth. How you doing, everybody? Phil here on the podcast. I've been out there at the front lines, man, grinding away, playing the bars, recording tracks, making records, moving around, running the P2 empire. All these other bands out there you see playing and all that, let me tell you what, man, they're all cutting checks. They're all hiring publicists and managers and booking agents, blah, 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 blah. Anytime you see me out there, Phil Pritchett hanging on the wall, or you hear somebody talk about me, just know that just comes right from me. I don't know why that's important to me for people to know, but I want to know that I'm a homemade cottage industry, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, not that that should affect anything. Of course, what matters is if you like my music, you like the band's shows, of course that's what's important, but maybe I shouldn't. But I take great pride in knowing that, I manage my own affairs here, run my own little empire, and don't worry about all the other things that everybody else seems so worried about. I don't know. You know what, man? Phil Pritchett and the full band, we're gonna outlive. We've already outlived MySpace. You know what I mean? It came and it went, man. It came and it went. I was told the whole time MySpace was around how vital it was to my career. Vital, Phil. Come on. Let's go, dude. Get on MySpace. And we did. What did I do? Uploaded a couple of tracks. Couple of updates, signed up some friends, you know what I what? But man, bands just got obsessed. Bands got lost in MySpace. They disappeared. They'd email me, hey man, we got 15,000 friends. How many do you got? I'm like, I don't know, 800? There's oh, Phil, jeez. Phil, you got to work on your career, man. I mean, come on, you're bigger than us. How come we have so many fans? We have so many friends, man. I'm just like, dude, y'all don't even have a record. I don't understand. Oh, man, come on. That's not a matter. Look, man, the point is you want people following you, man. Record labels, they're going to look at how many people are following you on MySpace. Man, that's where it all is today. That's the future, man, MySpace. The future is MySpace. So I don't know. I don't even know if there's still a Phil Pritchett MySpace page out there. Maybe it is. Lingering there in cyberspace, just you know, for somebody to stumble across on an old internet connection in Siberia. Enjoy, comrades. Oh, and then, man, Phil, what are you doing, Phil? What are you doing? Talking about vinyl and writing. You got to go on Facebook, dude. You're on Facebook. Okay, so I'm on Facebook. Here's some pictures. Here's some stuff. Great. Oh, man, Phil, hey, what are you doing? You got to update. You got to update all the time, man. We want to know what you're eating for breakfast. We want to know this. We want to know that. People want to know. Look, man, no one cares. Everyone wants to know what you're doing all the time. I'm like, ah, okay. I got a couple updates. I'm coming to town. See y'all next week, whatever. Oh, what are you reading the news now, man? Facebook stock struggling. I'm just getting spammed out the ass. It's just MySpace all over again. I've been saying on this show for a couple years, it looks great, but after a while, you've heard everything, seen everything. I hardly look at my page anymore. And I'll admit, there was a while there where people were signing up a lot, and I was kind of having to keep up with that. Hey, man, welcome aboard. Hey, good to see you, whatever. People I hadn't connected with in a long time. But I'm all connected, man. We only got so many friends and friends and fans out there. Let's just face it. And all those bands, man, with 100,000 followers, they're all wondering what to do next. It's not that those 100,000 people are following that band. The 100,000 people want that band following them. You know how this works. Come on, man. I have never asked to be anyone's friend on Facebook. Not once. Or MySpace. So I know in my heart of hearts, when I see a little number on there, here's how many people are looking at you, I say, hey, that's just a natural number. It's not because I went out and grabbed them myself and said, hey, come aboard. No pushing myself on anybody, man, in that regard. I just try to pull people toward me, right? Pull people toward me with some music and not beating them down too much. Hopefully that's what's going on. Oh, man, Twitter. You know, and so here I am, man. We're just surviving. We're just surviving, man. The dinosaurs are going to be dropping off. And what's gonna keep going, man? Phil and the Takamine and his ostrich boots just kind of walking on stage in Stephenville or Houston or Corpus somewhere. I'm not saying that with some sort of ego or I'm gloating. Certainly those are, you know, in some ways very humble gigs to play. But I'm proud to do it. Proud to do it, man. Love it. And that's how we do it. We'll come play in your backyard as always. 817-733-5256. Well, anybody that knows me knows that I love movies, and they also know that I'm very behind on what's going on. You know what? I mean, with the dawn of Netflix and stuff like that, now stuff comes to the theater. Oh, man, I'm like you out there. I got kids. I got better things to do. I'm not going to go sit and have some huge guy and listen to some huge guy behind me in the theater slurp on his 54-ounce drink and smack his popcorn while I'm trying to watch the new film that's been nominated for an Oscar. No! I just say to myself, you know what? The cycles are short. It'll be in the theater for a month or so. It'll disappear, then it'll show up on my Netflix here in a few months, and I'll just order on DVD. So that's what I've been doing. So, man, I now want to give you my 2012 Oscar preview. I'm being funny. 2012, that was last year, right? The years go by quick, don't they? Yeah, but I finally got around to seeing some films that I've been wanting to see forever and just haven't. And man, some of them were very, very good. I don't see many movies now, of course. I'm all anti-superheroes and sequels. So that takes away about 98% of the market for me. But a couple I did want to see, man, I heard great things about, We Bought a Zoo. Oh, Phil, what come my way? Look, man, Cameron Crowe, great filmmaker, sat down with the kids and watched it, and really enjoyed it, my older kids, and enjoyed it, man. Matt Damon, oh, man, his politics drive me nuts. He's kind of, but he's a good guy, and he comes across very likable on screen, so enjoyed We Bought a Zoo very much. And, you know, the whole time watching, I'm like, man, they just don't make movies like this very much anymore. Yeah, just kind of a family drama. Kind of makes you feel good at the end of it. You're kind of like, hey, man, what a good movie. All right. I appreciated that. Loved The Iron Lady. The Iron Lady. Meryl Streep, the first lady of film. Of course, I grew. She's been part of my childhood growing up with Meryl Streep. Now, Meryl Streep's more of a girl idol. You know, my mom's favorite and my wife's favorite actress, Meryl Streep. But there's no denying she's a great actress. I don't see all of her stuff, you know. But man, when she's good, she's great. So I love the whole Margaret Thatcher story, The Iron Lady, the story biography of Margaret Thatcher. I was interested in watching this one, man, because I was, you know, growing up in the '80s, you heard a lot about you know, Pope John Paul, Ronald Reagan, and Margaret Thatcher, and then over here you had the Soviet Union, and all this was the '80s, man, hiding under your desk. Worrying about world war and nuclear war and all this kind of stuff. It was all very real, man. You know, some of you guys that were just kind of grew up in the '90s missed some of that, but it was a very real thing. I talked to a couple podcasts ago about Rod Stewart growing up in England. I read the Rod Stewart autobiography, and man, the image he paints of England is just dismal, man, in the mid '70s. I remember in 1974, 75, 76, all those British rock stars, the Stones and Rod Stewart and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin, they all left England. They all bought homes in the United States or in France or somewhere else to escape the taxes. Early 70s, late 70s, the Labour Party, kind of the liberal party in England, was in power, and they just kept passing taxes on those higher, those tax rates were like 90% or something just insane, like 85% or something like that. And God, there was some great stuff in there with Rod Stewart. Stewart talking about in England how it was really almost impossible to go from being a poor working class bloke to being a super rich Englishman. You still got a real caste system over there. The system is not structured for people to be able to just start a business and borrow money and, you know, get rich and buy a big house and a boat, you know, like it is in the United States that we all take for granted. There's a lot of things that keep you down. You just kind of got to, you know, you work or you don't, and you just take government assistance and you live with your parents if you're poor. And if you're rich, you're just born into it. You already own land. You already own castles and businesses and stuff like that. So the fact that Stewart was a poor, the only way to get rich in England in the 60s and 70s was to make it in other parts of the world, like these rock stars did. It was just very, very, very unusual and something the country hadn't dealt with. So there's a great scene in the book where Rod Stewart talks about he's with Woody, Ron Wood, his compatriot and partner in crime. They've got their, you know, Woody's got his cigarettes. He goes, we each had like a bottle of wine in our hands. Hungover, and I'm going to look at a castle I was thinking about buying. And he's being led around the grounds of like this Downton Abbey type estate by this old old Earl of some kind. You know, just, and this is the master's suite. And just Stewart's just, it looks all right to me. Hey, everybody. You know, and the guy finally turned to Rod Stewart and says, how is a young man like you able to buy a place like this? He says, well, I play music. You know, I'll tell you the estates with my friend Woody. Yeah. So that's what they did, man. They just they busted up these rock stars, just the few of them there, the Zeppelin Stones guys, Elton John. They really busted the caste system with this kind of deal in the 70s. Unprecedented kind of stuff. And Stewart's accountant would call him and say, hey, man, you're making all this money. Dude, you better get out and buy some cars or a house or something, or all this is going to the government. The tax rate was going up and up and up and up and up. So that's why Stewart was buying castles. He goes, man, I had Ferraris, Lamborghinis. I was trying to spend it so before I had to pay all these taxes on it and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, fascinating stuff. But that kind of ties into the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher story. In the mid-70s, finally Stewart and these guys give up. They can't spend it. The government's coming after them. So they all just leave. Stewart moves to Los Angeles. The Stones, they all lived in Greece or something. So they all move away. And that's kind of where this movie, The Iron Lady, Meryl Streep, Margaret Thatcher, takes place. There's all these strikes in the mid-70s, despite the high taxes. There's garbage. Stewart said in his book, and there was a scene in the movie as well I thought was interesting, where the trash bags on the curb are just piled to the sky, and all the British people have, you know, handkerchiefs over their faces to stink because the garbage guys were striking, and these guys were striking, and the industry guys were striking. No one was working, and yet the taxes were going through the roof to cover for it. It was a disaster. So I enjoyed The Iron Lady immensely, as we see a conservative Margaret Thatcher, ambitious, tough, and the movie, I think, paints a very fair picture of her. It doesn't paint her in the most positive light as far as a wife or a mother. She did have two children and a devoted husband, Dennis. It does a good job of just showing kind of what she was up against and the environment that she came to power in. People looking for some other way. So, of course, she gets in there, cuts taxes, forces all these labor guys to go back to work, and the country starts running again, and the businesses do well. And the same thing was going on in the early to mid-80s, you know, with Ronald Reagan in the United States. And, you know, he kind of this conservative wave. But needless to say, Meryl Streep was great in it, wonderful in it. It was kind of sad. I mean, because the story focuses on Margaret Thatcher today. I think she's still alive. She's got dementia. She still feels like she talks to her husband a lot, though he's been dead for several years now. And so it goes back to her now, and then her, it's flashing back, and the story's told that way. So I thought they did it in a very good way, and I really enjoyed it, man. Kind of took me back to the 80s, and, back where patriotism and hard work meant something, by God. Anyway, it was good to see. It left me wondering, man, where are the leaders today like this? You know, she just defied everybody to, you know, make people proud of Britain and standing on principle and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know. You can disagree with her politics, but at least as far as her backbone, you know, she kept talking about in the movie about politicians today. They're always taking the pulse of the public, always looking at polls and shifting their views. And, man, that's just not how Thatcher, and she talked about Ronald Reagan, operated. Probably opposite from more like a Bill Clinton, the master politician type, who's always sort of, you know, trying to fit in with what's going on. It's a little bit like we talked about Rod Stewart, you know, fitting in with the disco era and the 80s era, as opposed to the Neil Youngs, the guys who just never changed. But at the end of the day, when those guys are 70, 80 years old, the guys you look back on with the most reverence, I think, who have the most integrity, are the ones who were steadfast in their belief and stood by their music or their policies or whatever it was. And we don't so much remember the guy that ebbed and flowed. Oh, he was a disco guy and he was this and he was this. And, you know, he shifted more to the right when he lost Congress. And that doesn't resonate through the years. There's no question, right? I mean, you know. So Thatcher, the Iron Lady, check it out. I think that's last year's Oscars or something like that. Like I say, I'm catching up. Anyway. Then we move on to the other movie I was looking forward to seeing, The Descendants with George Clooney. Of course, this was nominated for several Oscars. I think Best Picture, Best Actor, George Clooney. The Descendants, Clooney, rich Hawaiian guy, two kids he's kind of estranged from, his somewhat distant wife that he's grown distant from gets in a horrible accident. She's in a coma. She dies. And the story's about Clooney finding out that his wife was having an affair with another guy. She was cheating on him, trying to reconnect with his daughters who were, you know, going through this difficult time of grief. And also in another side plot, Clooney and his family, his cousins, own a large, huge plot of land on the coast in Hawaii that they've all decided to sell, that had been left to them from generations of, you know, they're all native Hawaiians. But the kids, the current owners, all Clooney and his cousins, are going to sell it. They're all going to make just tons of money and sell it to a resort developer or something like that. So that's where the story takes place if you haven't seen it. I was really looking forward to seeing it. Although, man, when it started, man, this was, I give this one 2 stars out of 5. Ah, man, Clooney, I like Clooney. I tell myself I like Clooney. But man, he's a little soulless, man. And I don't want that to be too harsh. I just feel like some of these movies, he's always in it. He's looking good. He's a good actor, but he never gets really angry on screen. He never just openly sobs on screen. He's never side-splittingly funny on screen. He's just there, and he's just looking dapper, and he's kind of got a smirk on his face. And he moves from scene to scene, and he's a competent actor, and he's likable. But that's all I feel about Clooney. And I feel like this film was rife with moments where you would expect, the lead actor to just be, you know, putting on some kind of a display. Say what you want to about Tom Cruise. I mean, he can certainly go over the top. But I mean, if you want like A Few Good Men or, Jerry Maguire, there's scenes where Cruise just goes over the top and probably too far. Okay. But his intensity and his passion is very real. It comes across. You can see Cruise's lower lip quivering. His eyes burn into the camera as he's delivering lines to Jack Nicholson. Nicholson's the same way. Jack Nicholson, I mean, is he over the top sitting on the stand for A Few Good Men? Of course he is, but that's why we watch movies. You know, he's not just kind of sitting there with a smirk on his face going, yeah, you can't handle the truth. You know what I mean? Come on, man. We need to thunder away here a little bit. Clooney just kind of, he moves through these movies. All movies I like, but it never reaches up and grabs you. You know, like Daniel Day-Lewis or somebody like that. Maybe that's unfair to compare him to someone like Lewis. But there's other actors out there that I'm much bigger fans of. And for those reasons, Nicholson, Cruise, Lewis. And the thing is they're willing to really go for lines and go for scenes and go for passion and emotion. And I feel like Clooney's always a little reserved. Brad Pitt too, very reserved, just kind of withdrawn a little bit, looks good, but not too great. So that kind of bothered me. Another thing that bothered me about The Descendants was the story. I guess, I don't know if it's a true story. I know it's a novel based on a book. But man, it just seemed kind of disconnected. You got Clooney trying to reconnect with his kids. His wife, bless her heart, it took her forever to die. Good grief. We keep saying she's dying. She's dying. Then just an hour and a half into the movie, your mother is going to die. I'm just like, is she not dead already? Good grief, man. Let's move on. So it hangs, man. It hangs around. Oh, and then she finally dies and you're waiting for some big thing and they just throw her ashes into the water. And Clooney says, well, I guess that's it. And they go back to shore. And you're kind of like, huh? You know, that's how I was. So The Descendants. And then in another deal, they're selling this land. And so that's a whole plot line. Clooney kind of, you know, part of him wants to sell it and get the money, but he's already rich, lawyer kind of guy. And a lot of his cousins are broke and they can't wait to sell it and get all the money. And then Clooney, his wife dies. And then at the end of the movie, there's a ceremony where he's supposed to sign the papers to sell the land. And he kind of goes, you know what? You know, and he made a very eloquent speech to his other cousins and said, this land was entrusted to us, and now we're just going to sell it and get the money. I don't feel right about it. And he didn't sign it, which is fine. But you aren't really shown what those motives were, besides, well, maybe he's just had a change of heart. But you don't know, man, how does that relate to his wife dying? Like, it would have made more sense in the movie if, like, that land was owned by his wife's family. And then you could see, like, oh, Clooney, he realizes he's lost his wife, but he can still keep her living by keeping the land. You know, so I don't know. Maybe that's too Hollywood. Maybe that's too tied with a nice bow. That probably is. So anyway, it just kind of leaves you like, okay, so he didn't sell the land. And then he never really reconnects with his kids. They just kind of go on with their lives. They're friendly with each other. But there's never like a have it out moment, with his kids. I feel like over, you know, they kind of yell at each other, you know, it's just terrible language. They're just F bombs everywhere. And I kept having to turn the sound down a little bit. The kids are trying to sleep in the house. I don't know, man. So Descendants. Yeah. All I heard is it was great and great acting. And, I don't know, man. I kind of didn't see it. Unfulfilling plot and story, and then did not teach us a whole lot about family, about grief, about reconciliation. And it just kind of, you had these plot lines with the mom dying in the coma and the land. They both resolve unsatisfactorily, and you don't really see how the two are connected. And then the credits roll. So that's my review of The Descendants. Sorry, Clooney. I still love you, but man, you know, not enough. Not enough. Like Meryl in the Meryl Streep in The Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher greatness, and the likable Matt Damon in We Bought a Zoo. Good films, man. Good films. You know, in an unrelated story, I went back to Netflix DVD. I returned to Netflix DVD. That's where we all started, isn't it? I'm going through this thing. When I need physical product, I don't. Maybe this is, you know, like we talked about in the last podcast, needing that vinyl in front of you or something, in the digital age. No, man, the streaming Netflix, it's awesome. It works great. It just didn't have any material, man. There was a few movies on there, and then tons of just cartoons and Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles that my boys want to watch. So there's always some violent thing going on. I'm just like, look, man, we're getting rid of the Netflix because they know it's always there. They just walk in the room and go, hey, turn on Power Rangers. You know, I mean, in my day, you had to wait for that show to come on. You had to sit there and suffer through the commercials, by God. So that's what I'm going to let my kids do. It sounds great that you don't have to do that, but the problem is then you got these kids fighting over what to watch. There's 1,000 choices. So I just said, look, man. So I changed the Netflix account from streaming back to DVDs. Now, lo and behold, no, now I can get, you know, oh man, season 2 of Downton Abbey, which never came on streaming for some reason. The first season was on there. Season 2 of Downton's coming. Oh man, we watched American Movie. Oh man, great film. If you've never seen it, American Movie, check it out, about the guy in Wisconsin making his own horror film. Hilarious and great. Anyone who ever tried to make a movie or an album needs to see this. American Movie, check that out. But it's been cool, man, because you're getting, you know, like Iron Lady. You know, we bought a zoo. These are more modern, you know, current movies that show up in the mailbox. You get the little thrill of seeing it in the mailbox, you know, once every few days or something like that. So I don't know. Does that mean I'm going backwards? I'm just buying vinyl, going back to DVDs? Ah, I don't know anymore. All I know is the digital world is so unfulfilling. It's just this vapid expanse. And I'm out there. Hey, man, you know, we got Facebook and MySpace, but by God, Phil Pritchett and the full band's going to outlive them all. Outlive them all! We'll throw dirt on the graves of Facebook. Of course, there'll be something else that comes along that I got to be on, and I'll put a picture and some music on there and some updates from time to time. But then it'll be gone as well. But man, that old CD of Phil World or, you know, High Tide in the Heartland will always be rolling around. Well, let me know what's going on, folks. Phil@philpritchett.com. Book those private parties spring and summer, 817-733-5256. And come see the full band. We're playing so many shows now, especially in DFW. We're playing all the time, man. We're playing, Common Table in Dallas, The Mansion once a month in Dallas. Great fun gig at the nicest hotel in all of Dallas, Mansion on Turtle Creek. And then just tons of different shows, man. We're going down, of course, Firehouse. Out to the Blue Lights again, Lubbock in March. Where else? Bostock's, great show down there recently in Stephenville. Great to see Mark and all my friends down there once again. So we're out there, man. As always, let me know what's going on. Love getting your emails. I'll always respond to them. Phil@philpritchett.com. Let me know what's going on, folks. It's been great getting back on the horse here, the podcast horse in our new location. Let me know what's going on. Love to you all. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Much tougher.